Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 70 countries worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on a Ralph Nader interview right after this message. When people call the law school and ask how they can learn more about the topics that I speak on over the air, keep in mind that most of the topics that you hear on the radio I teach in detail in one of my classes here at the law school. For example, when you hear me talking about the common law, it was Alfred the Great who codified the common law in 872 AD. Into 49 principles or statutes, of which 22 were incorporated into our Constitution and Bill of Rights. Now, the common law was taken from the Mosaic law given to Moses at Mount Sinai. You'll see that recorded in Exodus 19, verse 16, through Exodus 24, verse 8. And that includes negligence, insurance, and taxes, such as income tax, property tax, and social security taxes. Now, these IRS tax laws are a counterfeit of the tithing laws of Scripture, and they work a theft on everyone who participates in them. Now, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob gave us a better way of life than income tax and Social Security, and that's the basis of my tax and status school. You know, we owe this income tax and Social Security tax because we agreed to it. We bought into it. We contracted for it. Now, if you'd like to learn more about tax and status, why don't you write and ask for my free general law CD package? It's educational, informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can order yours by calling direct 417-273-4967. If you're online, just go to the website and send me an email. That's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and then send your email request. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Do it right now before you forget. Pat Buchanan was a speechwriter for Richard Nixon. He ran for president at least once, maybe twice, on an independent or a third-party ticket. Pat Buchanan is a conservative of conservatives. He interviewed Ralph Nader. It's that the longtime progressive, Ralph Nader, makes a pitch for the disenfranchised right. Ralph Nader recently accepted Pat Buchanan's invitation to sit down with us and to explain why his third-party presidential bid ought to appeal to conservatives. Conservatives, disaffected with George W. Bush. Now, we think that readers will be interested in the reflections of a man who has been a major political and a politician and political figure in American life for 40 years or more, and who now finds himself the rarest of all political birds, a conviction politician. Buchanan started off and said, let me start off by asking you a foreign policy question. Iraq and the Middle East, you have seen the polls indicating widespread contempt for the United States abroad. Why do you think that people abroad hate us? Ralph Nader. Well, first of all, we've been supporting despots, dictators, and oligarchs in all of those states for a variety of reasons and purposes. We supported Saddam Hussein. Remember, he was our anti-communist dictator until 1990. And it's also cultural. They see corporate culture as abandoning the restraints on personal behavior dictated by their religion and culture. Our corporate pornography and our anything-goes values are profoundly offensive to them. The other thing that is that we are supporting the Israeli military regime with billions of dollars and ignoring both the Israeli peace movement within Israel, which is very substantial, and the Palestinian peace movement. And they see a nuclear-armed Israel that could wipe out the Middle East in a weekend if it wanted to. So they think that we're on their backs, in their house, undermining their desire to overthrow their own tyrants. Pat Buchanan then asked, well, then you would say it is not only Bush who is at fault, but Clinton and Bush and Reagan, all the way back, Ralph Nader. The subservience of our congressional and White House puppets to Israel's military policy has been consistent. Until 1991, any dictator who was anti-communist could qualify as an American ally. Buchanan, you use the term congressional puppets. Well, did John Kerry show himself to be a congressional puppet when he voted to give the president a blank check to go to war? Ralph Nader, they're almost all puppets, and there are two sets of puppets, congressional puppets and White House puppets. When the chief puppeteer comes to Washington, the puppets prance. Buchanan. Well, then, why do both sets of puppets support the Sharon-Likud policies in the Middle East rather than the peace movement candidates and leaders in Israel? Nader. That's a good question, because the peace movement is broad indeed. They just put 120,000 people in a square in Tel Aviv. They are composed of former government ministers, existing and former members of the Knesset, former generals, former combat veterans, former heads of internal security, people from all backgrounds. It's not some fringe movement. The answer to your question is that instead of focusing on how to bring a peaceful settlement, both parties concede their independent judgment to the pro-Israeli lobbies in this country, because they perceive them as determining the margin in some state elections and as sources of funding. They don't appear to agree with Tom Friedman, who wrote that memorable phrase, Ariel Sharon was Arafat under house arrest in, or has Arafat rather, under house arrest in Ramallah, and Bush under house arrest in the Oval Office in Washington. Virtually no member of Congress can say that. And so we come to this paradoxical conclusion, that there is far more freedom in Israel to discuss this than there is in the United States, which is providing billions of dollars in economic and military assistance. Buchanan. Well, let me move along onto Iraq. You were opposed to the war, and it now appears that it has become a sort of a bloody stalemate. And you said that you would bring troops out of Iraq within 6 months. Well, what if the country collapses and becomes a haven for terrorists? Would you send American troops back to clean it up? Nader. Under my proposal, there would be an international peacekeeping force, and the withdrawal would be a smart withdrawal during which there are internationally supervised elections. We'd have both military and corporate withdrawal, because the Iraqi people see American corporations are beginning to take over their economy, including their oil resources, and we would continue humanitarian assistance until the Iraqi people get on their feet. We would bring to the forefront during the election autonomies for the Kurds, Sunnis, and the Shiites. So this would be like a withdrawal in Vietnam, where we just barely got out with the helicopters. The American conservative. You often mention corporations. What is the theory behind this, or what are the alternatives to corporate economic power? I presume that you're not talking about the state ownership or socialism, or perhaps you are. Nader. Well, that's what representative government is for, to counteract the excesses of the moneyed interests, as Thomas Jefferson said, because big business realizes that the main countervailing force against their excesses and abuses is government. Their goal has been to take over government, and they do this with money and politics. They do it by putting their top officials at the Pentagon, the Treasury, the Federal Reserve, and they do it by providing job opportunities to retiring members of Congress. The corporations in America have law firms that draft legislation and think tanks that provide ready-made speeches. These corporations also do it by threatening to leave the country. The quickest way to bring members of Congress to his or her knees is by shifting industries abroad. Concentrated corporate power violates many principles of capitalism. For example, under capitalism, owners control their property. Under multinational corporations, the shareholders do not control their corporation. Under capitalism, if you can't make the market respond, you sink. Under big business, you don't go bankrupt, you go to Washington for a bailout. Under capitalism, there is supposed to be freedom of contract. When was the last time you negotiated a contract with banks or an auto dealer? They are all fine print contracts. The law of contracts has been wiped out for 99% of contracts that ordinary consumers sign on to. Capitalism is supposed to be based on law and order. Corporations get away with corporate crime, corporate fraud, and corporate abuse. And finally, capitalism is premised on a level playing field. The most meritorious is supposed to win. Tell that to a small inventor or a small business up against McDonald's, or a software programmer up against Microsoft. Giant multinational corporations have no allegiance to any country or community other than to control them or abandon them. So what we have now is the merger of big business and big government to further subsidize costs or eliminate risks or guarantee profits by our government. Pat Buchanan asked, let's move to immigration. We stop 1.5 million illegal aliens on our borders every year. 1 million still get through. There are currently 8 to 14 million illegal aliens in the United States. The president is mandated under the Constitution to defend the states against foreign invasion. And this certainly seems to constitute a foreign invasion. Ralph Nader, well, as long as our foreign policy supports dictators and oligarchs, you're going to have desperate people moving north over the border. Part of the problem involves NAFTA. The flood of cheap corn into Mexico has dispossessed and made unemployed and bankrupted more than 1 million Mexican farmers. And with their families, they either go to the slums or, in their desperation, they head north to the United States. In addition, I don't think the United States should be in the business of brain-draining skilled talent, especially in the third world, because we are importing in the best engineers, scientists, software people, doctors, entrepreneurs, who should be in their own countries, building their own countries, and we're driving the talent of those countries to our shores. Pat Buchanan, well then, how would you propose that we defend these shores? Nader says, I don't believe in giving visas to software people from the third world when we have all kinds of unemployed software people right here in the United States. Let's get down to the manual labor. This is the reason the Wall Street Journal is for an open borders policy. They want a cheap wage policy, and there are two ways to deal with that. One is to raise the minimum wage to the purchasing power level of 1968, which is $8 per hour. And then in another year, raise it to $10 an hour because the economy since 1968 has doubled in production per capita. All right, we're looking at an interview by Pat Buchanan of Ralph Nader. We'll be back in just a minute. Stand by. All right, you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States and worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and the Law School, please go to the website at georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. And the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It's open to individuals by prearrangement only. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. All right, we're reviewing an interview by Pat Buchanan. Buchanan was a speechwriter for Richard Nixon. He's a conservative writer and columnist. You'll see him on the McLaughlin, oh, it's on PBS, on the McLaughlin report or something like that. And Ralph Nader. Ralph Nader is an independent running for president, and he's been accused more than once of being a spoiler for the Republicans, siphoning off votes from the Democrats. No matter what you think of him, here's some of Ralph Nader's views. Let's continue. Pat Buchanan asked this question. He said, say we went to $10 an hour in minimum wage. It's 50 cents an hour in Mexico. Now, why wouldn't that cause not 1.5 million, but 3 million Mexicans to head straight north where they could be making 20 times what they can make minimum wage in Mexico? Ralph Nader, because 14 million Americans are unemployed or part-time employed who want full employment or have given up looking for jobs. The more the minimum wage goes up, the more they will do so-called work that Americans won't do. They're not going to do it at $5.15 an hour and have another used car, another insurance policy, another repair bill to get to work, but they're much more likely to do it at $10 an hour. And the second is to enforce the law against employers. It's hard to blame desperately poor people who want to feed their families and are willing to work their heads off. You have to start with Washington and Wall Street. Pat Buchanan. Well, should illegal aliens be entitled to social welfare benefits even though they're not citizens and broke into our country? Nader. I think they should be given all the fair labor standards and all the rights and benefits of American workers. And if this country doesn't like that, maybe they'll do something about the immigration laws. Buchanan. Should they be entitled to get driver's licenses? Ralph Nader. Yes, in order to reduce hazards on the highway. If you have people who are driving illegally, there are going to be more crashes and more people are going to get killed. Buchanan. The Democrats have picked up on Bush's amnesty idea and have proposed an amnesty for illegals who have been in this country for 5 years and who have shown that they have jobs and can support themselves. Would you support the Democratic proposal? Nader. This is a very difficult because you're giving a green light to cross the border illegally. I don't like the idea of legalization because then the question is how do you prevent the next wave and then the following wave? I like the idea of giving workers and children that are working. They're having their taxes withheld. They're performing a valuable service. And even though they're illegally here, of giving them the same benefits of any other worker. Now, if that produces enough outrage to raise the immigration issue to a high enough level of visibility for public debate, I think that is the best thing for America. Buchanan. The U.S. population now, primarily due to immigrants and their children coming in, is estimated to grow to over 400 million by mid-century. Would that have an adverse impact on the environment? Nader. Well, we don't have the absorptive capacity for that many people. Over 32 million came in the 90s, which is the highest in American history. Buchanan. What would you do about it? Nader. We have to control our immigration. We have to limit the number of people who come into this country illegally. Buchanan. What level of legal immigration do you think we should have per year? Nader. Well, first of all, we have to say that, or what is, the impact on African Americans and Hispanic Americans in this country in terms of wages of our present stance on immigration. It's a wage-depressing policy, which is why the Chambers of Commerce and the National Association of Manufacturers Tyson Foods, and the Wall Street Journal all like it and support it. The AFL-CIO has no objection to it because they think they can organize all of these illegal workers. Buchanan, they switched. Ralph Nader, well, because they have been so inept at organizing other workers, there's hardly a more complex issue except on the outside of the issue, the foreign policy and NAFTA. Buchanan, I was going to ask you about that, NAFTA and the WTO. What's your position? Nader, sovereignty shredding, you know. The decisions are now in Geneva, bypassing our courts, our regulatory agencies, and our legislatures. Buchanan, well, I find it amazing that Congress sits there and they get an order from the World Trade Organization and they capitulate. What happened to bristling conservative defiance? Don't tread on me patriotism. I think the problem is that a lot of those guys in Washington, in the Congress, I think some of them are basically good guys, but I went up there and I was asking about some issue and they would say things like, I don't even know what it's about. My boss tells me. Nader. Well, did you hear about my challenge to Senator Hank Brown? Well, we put a challenge out before the World Trade Organization was voted in 1995 because we went all over Capitol Hill and had never found any member of Congress or a staffer who had ever read the proposal. So I said, I'll give you $10,000 or I'll give it to my favorite or your favorite charity of any member of Congress who will sign an affidavit that he or she has read the World Trade Organization agreement, and I'll answer 10 questions in public. Well, the deadline passed and nobody in Congress, so I extended it a week. A quarter to five on Friday, the phone rings in our office. It's Hank Brown. And he said, I don't want the $10,000. And I'm not moving to get the $10,000 for charity, but I'll take you up on it. Now, how much time do I have? I said, take a month. So he reserves the Senate Foreign Relations Committee for the interrogation. It gets even better than that. The press is all there, and in the witness chair is Hank Brown. We have 12 questions, and he answers every one. They weren't all simple questions either. It was really impressive. And I said, thank you very much, Senator. That was really commendable. And we start to get up, and he says, wait, I've got something to say. And Brown said, quote, you know, I'm a free trader, and I voted for NAFTA. But after reading the World Trade Organization agreement, I was so appalled by the anti-democratic provisions that I'm going to vote against it, and I'm going to urge everyone in Congress to vote against it also. Well, the next day, there was no press, and it shows you the bias against anybody who challenges those multinational systems of autocratic government that we call trade agreements, and he didn't convince one extra senator. So once, when I testified before the House Ways and Means Committee, I had to say some nice things at the beginning. I said, Mr. Chairman, distinguished members of the House Ways and Means Committee, it's indeed a pleasure to testify before a committee of Congress that has read this proposed trade agreement. And the chair looks up and says, what makes you think we read it? Well, let's put it this way. It is impossible to exaggerate the dereliction of diligence, the dereliction of duty that goes on in the Congress of the United States. Pat Buchanan, can we move on to taxes? Reagan cut the top tax rate from 70 to 28% in terms of personal income taxes. Clinton raised it to 39.6%. Bush has cut it back to 35%. What do you think is the maximum income tax rate that should be imposed on wage earners? Ralph Nader, $0 under $100,000 a year. Now you got to ask me how I'm going to make up the difference. Buchanan, what is the rate above 100,000? What is the top rate? Nader, well, then you have a graduated rate, 35% in that range for the top rate. It comes down to the loophole. When it was 70%, did you ever meet anybody who paid 70% income tax? Now, where would I make it up? This is where the creativity comes in. I'd move the incidence of taxation first from work to wealth. So I'd keep the estate tax number one. Buchanan, you restore the estate tax to 55%? Ralph Nader, that's a little extreme. Buchanan, that's where Bush has it, 55%, and he's cutting it down gradually to zero. What do you think it should be? Ralph Nader, again, 35%. Buchanan, would this be on all estates? Nader, no. Estates above $10 million. Pat Buchanan, Ralph, you're not going to raise much money with this tax. Nader, there will be a tax on smaller estates. I think all estates over $500,000 should pay some tax. The estate tax as a whole raises about $32 billion a year, but the thing is the loopholes in it. Buffett, as an example, won't pay because all of it's going to his foundation. I think we should have a very modest wealth tax. I agree with the founder of the Price Club, who thinks it should be 1%. Buchanan, 1% of your wealth each year would be turned over to the federal government? Is that what you're saying? Ralph Nader, right. Then the third shift is why don't we tax things we like the least? We should tax polluters. We should tax gambling. We should tax the addictive industries that are costing us so much and luring the youth into alcoholism and tobacco and drugs. And we should tax, above all, stock and currency speculation. Buchanan, a short-term capital gains tax? Nader, like a sales tax. If you go to a store and you buy furniture, you pay 6 or 7% of whatever it is you buy. You buy 1,000 shares of General Motors stock, you don't pay anything. So what we are doing is taxing food and clothing, but not the purchase of stocks, bonds, derivatives, and currency speculation. A quarter of a cent tax will produce hundreds of billions of dollars a year because of the volatility. You remember the days when 3 million shares on the New York Stock Exchange was a big day? Now a big day is 1.5 billion shares. The point is this. Work should be taxed the least or not at all. Then you move to wealth, and then you move to things that we do not like. And you will have more than enough to replace the taxes of under $100,000 income and to provide for universal health insurance and decent public transit and to repair the public works infrastructure. Buchanan. Well, so you have got a $500 billion deficit now, and the early baby boomer retirement starts in 2008. And by 2012, the whole Clinton and Bush generation gets Medicare and Medicaid. These are the biggest payers into these so-called trust funds. They're also going to be the biggest drawers on those funds, and 77 million of them retire in 2030. So how do you balance that budget, Nader? You repeal Bush's two tax cuts in 2001 and 2003, then you get out of Iraq, and you cut the waste and the shenanigans out of the military contract. That would be more than enough to take care of the deficit. Hang on, we've got to take another break. We'll be right back with more on the Nader-Buchanan interview right after this. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, people call the law school regularly, and they ask how they can learn more about the topics that I speak on over the air. Now, every topic that I cover on the air, I teach in some detail in one of my school's classes, tailored for busy people in every walk of life, people just like you. Now, for example, the origin of the common law. How is the common law applicable today, and how do we use the common law in court, on the street, at home, at work? Where did it come from anyway, and of what value is the common law in the 21st century? Well, the common law is important because it affects your status, and your status is how you're being taxed. And it's important because it affects your property or your lack of property. And this common law lesson is the first of 46 lessons in my tax and status school. And we have three basic goals. And the first goal is to keep you out of jail. Second, we need to save your assets. And third, we need to show you how to solve your tax problem once and for all. Now, if you want to live your life peaceably and be left alone, then this tax and status class is geared for you. You can call, write, or wire me, George Gordon, and ask for my free general law CD package, and I'll show you why the common law is so important to you and in so many different ways. Now, for more information about my tax and status school, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package. Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call direct and order yours right now. The number's 417-273-4967. Now, my tax and status school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. And if you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org, and click onto the email machine and then send an email request for your free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org or call direct, 417-273-4967. Well, Pat Buchanan interviewed Ralph Nader. Now, Buchanan is a conservative. Nader is a progressive. He's a liberal Democrat. That's what he is. But Ralph Nader has gotten under the skin of the Democratic Party. For some reason, they're after him like you can't believe. It's not entirely clear why, and Buchanan asks a few pointed questions along that line. First of all, Ralph Nader, you repealed Bush's two tax cuts in 2001 and 2003, then you get out of Iraq, and you could cut the waste and the shenanigans out of the military contracting, and that'll be more than enough to take care of the deficit. Buchanan, would you bring the troops home from Europe and Korea and the Balkans? Nader, we are presently defending prosperous nations like Japan, Germany, and England, who are perfectly capable of defending themselves against non-existent enemies. Buchanan, let me move on to social issues. Would you have voted against, or would you have voted in favor of the ban on partial birth abortion? Nader, well, I believe in choice, and I don't think government should tell women to have babies or not to have children. I'm also against feticide. If doctors think it's a fetus, that should be banned. It's a medical decision. Buchanan, is that a medical decision between the woman and her doctor? Nader, and whoever else, family, clergy? Buchanan, should homosexuals have the same right in law to form marriages and receive marriage licenses from the state as do men and women? Nader, yes, and if you had that, you wouldn't have to use the word marriage. The reason gay marriage is used is because state laws connect certain benefits with that word. As a lesbian leader was quoted saying in the New York Times a few weeks ago, the issue is not the word marriage, the word is equality. Buchanan, let's go on to politics. If you had not been in the race in 2000, who would have won the 2000 election? Nader, well, that requires me to be a retrospective clairvoyant. If I wasn't in a race, would the Democrats have gone all out to get out the vote in certain states because they were worried about the percentages that I was drawing? And if I was not in the race, would Gore have made populist statements day after day? I'm for the people, not the powerful, which polls showed brought him more votes than if he went to Lieberman's semantic route. Now, having said that, exit polls showed 25% of the people that voted for Nader would have gone to Bush, 38% would have gone to Gore, and the rest would have stayed home and not voted. Now, a month and a half ago, a poll came from New Hampshire that showed that 8% were for me, 9% for Republicans, 11% for Independents, 4% for Democrats. Now, Buchanan asks this question: if you hurt Bush more than Gore, why are the Democrats so keen on trying to keep you off the ballot, Nader? Because they will forever think that my progressive policies will take more Democratic votes, Independent votes, than they will take from the other side. Buchanan: so if you got 15% of the vote this time, who do you think would be the next president of the United States? Nader: I don't know how it would break. Buchanan: well, let me ask you about your ballot position, because it was around this time that we were wrapping up getting on the ballot in all 50 states. How many ballots are you on right now? Nader: none yet, but we'll be on more than 43 states, which is the number that we had last time. We went to get on them all, or we want to get on them all, and the problem is we haven't concentrated on the easy states. Is there any circumstance in which you can come to an arrangement with Kerry in the campaign not to run? Nader: the time to drop out is before you drop in. You cannot build a national campaign and get tens of thousands of volunteers working their hearts out, and then in October feed the cynicism of American politics by cutting some sort of a deal. So the answer to that is no. Buchanan: well, what are the reasons that a conservative should vote for Ralph Nader? Ralph Nader responded: well, largely, well, rather than Kerry. And Nader said: I'm not expecting conservatives to change their minds on certain issues that we disagree on. But if we look at the issues where we have common positions, they reach a level of gravity that would lead conservatives to stop, and to stop being taken for granted by the corporate Republicans and send them a message by voting for my independent candidacy. Now, here are the issues. One, the conservatives are furious with the Bush regime because of the fantastic deficits as far as the eye can see. That was a betrayal of Bush's positions, and it was a reversal of what Bush found when he came to Washington. Conservatives are very upset about their tax dollars going to corporate welfare kings, because that undermines market competition and is wasted use of their taxes. And conservatives are upset about the sovereignty, the shredding, the WTO and NAFTA. And I wish they had helped us more when we tried to stop them in Congress, because with a modest conservative push, we would have defeated NAFTA, because it was narrowly passed. If there was no NAFTA, there wouldn't have been any World Trade Organization. Conservatives are also very upset with a self-styled conservative president who is encouraging the shipment of whole industries and jobs to a despotic communist regime in China. And that is what I mean by the distinction between corporate Republicans and conservative Republicans. And next, conservatives, contrary to public belief, believe in law and order against corporate crime, fraud, and corporate abuse, and they're not satisfied that the Bush administration has done enough. Conservatives are also upset about the Patriot Act, which they view as big government, privacy invading, snooping, and excessive surveillance, and they're not inaccurate in that respect. And then finally, two other things that conservatives don't like: Leave No Child Behind, because it's stupidly conceived federal regulation of local school systems through a misguided and very fraudulent multiple-choice testing position. And the conservatives are aghast that a born-again Christian president has done nothing about rampant corporate pornography and violence directed to children and separating children from their parents and undermining parental authority. Now, if you add all of those up, you should have a conservative rebellion against the giant corporation in the White House, masquerading as a human being named George W. Bush, just as progressives have been abandoned by the corporate Democrats and told, you've got nowhere else to go other than to stay home to vote for the Democrats. This is the fate of the authentic conservatives in the Republican Party. And I noticed this a long time ago, Pat. I once said to Bill Bennett, would you agree that corporatism is on a collision course with conservative values? And Bennett said, yes. Now, the impact of these giant corporations, commercialism, direct marketing to children, sidestepping parents, selling them junk food, selling them violence, selling them sex and addictions, selling them the suspension of their socialization process. Years ago, conservatives spoke out on that, but it was never transformed into a political position. Now, it was always an ethical, religious value position, and it's time to take it into the political arena. Buchanan: well, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for coming over, Ralph. And Nader said, well, thank you very much. Now, this interview was reported in the Calamity Howler. The Calamity Howler is edited by and published by A.V. Krebs. You can subscribe to The Calamity Howler free of charge by simply sending an email to avkrebs@earthlink.net. Again, that's A.V. Krebs, A-V-K-R-E-B-S, at earthlink.net. Now, Krebs asks for a voluntary contribution. Now, he also puts out another paper, which is the Agricultural Examiner. I believe that's what it's called. Let's see if I got one here in front of me. I don't see one right in front of me here, but Agriculture Examiner, I believe it is. And I suggest $25 a month, about $300 a year, and you get both of these newsletters. They're about 17 pages each. Well worth $25 a month. And if you don't have the money, you don't send him anything. He says in his newsletter he's not going to turn anybody down because they're poor. So you can start off by getting it free. All you have to do is get on his email address. For those of you that can afford something, $5 a month, $10, or whatever you can afford, send it. Comes out every week, so you're going to get two newsletters a week for a month. So we're talking about 100 newsletters a year plus. For $300, you're only talking about $1.50 for each one. And it's the cheapest newsletter at $25 a month for both newsletters. I mean, it's the cheapest of the newsletters on the market anywhere that I know of in the world. That address again is avkrebs@earthlink.net. So don't forget to send him a voluntary contribution from time to time. Now, Krebs is kind of a liberal. You know, I'm a conservative and I don't make any bones about it. I don't vote, don't advocate voting. I don't advocate participation in the political process. So I'm one of the few people that's actually neutral. I'm not running against Bush or Kerry. I'm just here to report the news, to report the facts, and Ralph Nader has a position. And now I've reported that position to you. All right, hang on, we'll take a break and we'll be right back. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page at georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it's open to individuals by prearrangement only. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. Let's take a look at the national debt. The Bush administration borrowed $62.6 billion in May. Now, that's slightly more than $2,000 million a day added to our national debt. That's $2 billion a day, weekends included. Now, another way to look at that is that it's more than $23,000 a second, 24 hours a day, added to your obligation. And while you were reading this first paragraph, the government ran up your debt more than $100,000, and this is on top of the taxes that you pay them. Now, sometime in August, the national debt hit the ridiculous debt ceiling Congress continues to impose upon itself by pretending to limit the amount of money that the nation can borrow, a gesture that obviously has absolutely no meaning whatsoever any longer. And it was just last May 26, 2003, that Congress raised this crazy limit by $986 billion, keeping it just under $1 trillion so that they didn't frighten the public too much. Now, with national elections due on November the 2nd, the question is whether this will have an effect on George W. Bush's chances for re-election. Will the public be upset by the fact that we've borrowed $1 trillion in 15 months? The last time we hit the debt ceiling on February the 22nd, 2003, the borrowholics went on the wagon for 92 days, and the loyal laugh-a-lot media didn't even mention the fact. And of course, since the debt ceiling was raised, the borrowholics immediately made up for lost time. Now, can the Bush administration perform the same Enron-style magic again? Well, of course it can. None of this means that the sale of Treasury securities would stop. It takes billions of dollars per day to merely replace maturing securities, and heaven forbid the government would not want the national debt to go down because they failed to replace these loans. The suspension of new and additional debt would just be a temporary holding action. The real question is how long countries like communist China will continue to loan us more than $300 billion a year when they can get a better return on their money somewhere else. Already, about half of the securities tendered at auction are being turned down. And as of the end of May, we were $288 billion from the national debt ceiling. So if you figure that at a rate of a little more than $60 billion a month, this gives us another 6 or 7 months. Well, you're wrong. The interest against the Social Security Trust Fund, it's $1.57 trillion, is due in June. And paying this interest by simply handing the trust fund more bonds, useful solely for double taxation, will increase the national debt about $80 billion all by itself. Now, add another $60 billion or so in new borrowing on top of that, and you've got an increase of $140 billion for the month of June alone. Now, the national debt is only one leg of the perfect storm. Many economists are predicting that it's going to make the Great Depression of the 30s look like a picnic. No one is doing much of anything to stave off this looming crisis. Now let's take a look here at the American Civil Liberties Union, known as the ACLU. Well, in my humble opinion, it's been one of the greatest scourges of this nation for some time now, and I was shocked recently to learn that under a 1976 federal law called the Civil Rights Attorneys Fees Awards Act, let me give you that one again, it's called the 1976 federal law called the Civil Rights Attorneys Fees Awards Act. The ACLU has been gouging taxpayers for lawsuits that they initiate. Now, the law was designed to help plaintiffs in civil rights cases, but the ACLU has perverted it for First Amendment cases that they file. They claim it is a civil right not to see a cross, the Ten Commandments, or hear the Pledge of Allegiance. So when the ACLU recently sued the Los Angeles County Supervisors to have a small cross removed from its county seal, Los Angeles County caved in rather than fight, purportedly to avoid the legal costs. The problem is this: taxpayers will still be forced to pay the ACLU for their legal fees regardless. Now, this is a cash cow that the ACLU has found very profitable in recent years as a result of the famous Ten Commandments monument case against Judge Roy Moore in Montgomery, Alabama, in which the ACLU sued and a Carter-appointed judge forced the removal of the monument. The ACLU and two other leftist organizations stuck it to the state of Alabama's taxpayers for $540,000 in attorney's fees and expenses. In Kentucky, the ACLU has bilked the taxpayers there for $121,500 for another Ten Commandments offense, and taxpayers in one Tennessee county had to fork over $50,000 for the same thing. And then going back to California, when the ACLU sued to deny the Boy Scouts use of San Diego's Balboa Park recently, which the Scouts had used since 1915, they collected a staggering $790,000 in legal fees, plus $160,000 in court costs against, again, compliments of the taxpayers. And the crux of the lawsuit was that the ACLU's contention was that the Boy Scouts refused to accept homosexual scoutmasters, and because to do my duty to God and my country is a part of the Boy Scout oath. They should be designated a religious organization, says the ACLU. Now, with thousands of religious symbols all over our country, this madness will continue unless or until good Americans stand up to these hate groups like the ACLU and say that enough is enough. Fortunately, a bill has been introduced into the House of Representatives, House Resolution 3609, by Representative John Hostetler of Indiana, which would end the ACLU racketeering by amending the federal law that makes it all possible. Under this bill, the ACLU would no longer be able to collect attorney fees for winning these ridiculous lawsuits. This is a bill that all people should encourage their representative to embrace. It would be indeed interesting to see just how motivated the ACLU is to pursue its anti-Christian agenda if its members were forced to pay for it themselves. Now in Washington, taking a look here at the police state powers, citing concerns about terrorists crossing the nation's land borders, the Department of Homeland Security announced today that it planned to give Border Patrol agents sweeping new powers to deport illegal aliens from the frontiers abutting Mexico and Canada without providing the aliens with the opportunity to make their case before an immigration judge. The move, which will take effect this month, represents a broad expansion of the authority of the thousands of law enforcement agents who currently patrol the nation's borders. Until now, Border Patrol agents typically delivered undocumented immigrants to the custody of the immigration courts, where judges determined whether they should be deported or remain in the United States. Homeland Security officials described the immigration courts, which hear these pleas for asylum and other appeals to remain in this country, as sluggish and cumbersome, saying that illegal immigrants often wait more than a year before being deported, straining the capacity of detention centers and draining critical resources. Under the new system, immigrants will typically be deported within 8 days of their apprehension, officials said. Well, immigration legislation passed in 1996 allows the Immigration Service to deport certain groups of illegal aliens without judicial oversight. But until now, the agency only permitted officials at the nation's airports and seaports to do this. But this new rule will apply to illegal aliens caught within 100 miles of the Mexican and Canadian borders who have spent 14 days or less within the United States. The border agents will focus on deporting third country nationals rather than Mexicans or Canadians that they are expected to begin the exercising their new powers in August in Tucson and Laredo, Texas. Now, there is a concern that as we heighten the security of our ports of entry through our biometric checks, that there will be more opportunity or more effort made by terrorists to enter our country through our vast land borders. Asa Hutchison, the Undersecretary for Border Security at the Department of Homeland Security, said at a news conference, "We recognize that we have to secure those, and that's the president's first principle of immigration reform," Mr. Hutchison said. "America must secure its borders, and this is a part of that effort." The decision was hailed by officials who have long complained that the nation's porous borders represent a serious threat to national security, but it prompted a flurry of criticism from advocates for immigrants who warned that the new system lacked adequate safeguards to ensure that people fleeing persecution, American citizens lacking paperwork or other travelers with legitimate grounds, would not be improperly deported. All right, we'll have to leave it right there. Here's a reminder. These politically incorrect opinions, beliefs, comments, news, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. And they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, staff, or management of the network or of this radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, just go to my website. That's georgegordon.org or call the Law School Direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's georgegordon.org or call the law school at 417-273-4967. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week, both in the United States and around the world on the Internet. For more information about the Gordon Law School and The Law Hour, please go to the website georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, there's the signal that says my time is up. I got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.